Anybody who went to college a couple of decades or more ago can be shocked by what students pay today to go to the same schools, especially at the once low-cost public universities. As states have lessened taxpayer support for them, they have raised tuition so the students themselves pay much more of the burden. That results in more people taking out loans and bigger loans at that. We have much to talk about and three guests to help us through the conversation. Dr. Lucy Lipovsky is the one to talk to about college tuition. She's an economist focusing on higher education, runs Lipovsky Consulting, and is the former president of Mercy College in the greater New York area. Dr. Lipovsky, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Dr. Richard Fossey is with us as well. He's an education professor at the University of Louisiana Lafayette, and he's an expert on the student debt crisis. His website is condemnedtodebt.org. Dr. Fossey, thank you for joining us.
Good to be here.
And we also have Maxwell Lubin with us. He is the CEO of California RISE. He's a grad student at the University of California, Berkeley. RISE is seeking free public university tuition in California and perhaps elsewhere. Max Lubin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
In fact, Max, let's start with you because you actually worked on education policy in the Obama administration. Is that right?
That's correct.
Doing what?
I worked in the Office of Innovation, which is essentially a philanthropy in government that awards grants to school districts and nonprofits all over the country. And what I saw through that work was students who are doing everything right, working hard in school, getting great grades, and then getting the bill for the college they wanted to go to and not being able to go. And that was one of the inspirations for why we wanted to start RISE California and help make college more affordable and accessible and put a higher education within reach of every student who wants to earn one.
Within the Department of Education, when you worked there, I mean, did you get the sense that somebody had any particular great magic bullet idea that would solve the problem of the high tuition and high debt loads?
Well, I have to say I was inspired by President Obama's State of the Union address, where he introduced the idea of free community college for the nation. And that's one of the things that we saw kick off a much broader conversation in the country about higher education access and affordability. And as that's happened, the College Promise campaign and a number of folks across the country have been working on different models for free tuition to help more students succeed. So that was absolutely a part of it.
Okay, before we get to free tuition, though, we have the current tuition to deal with, and that I want to turn to Dr. Lucy Lipovsky for that. Relative to the rest of the economy, Lucy, how sharply has tuition risen, and approximately over what time period?
Well, tuition has risen way more than the Consumer Price Index over the last 20 years. But in public institutions, actually, it's risen faster than at private institutions. But public institutions, the increase has been driven in large part by reductions in state support, state and local support for higher education. At the private institutions, there's a different dynamic at work, and private institutions, for the most part, have taken an approach of high tuition, high aid. And so the net price, what students are actually paying, has not increased very much, and is fairly flat over the last 15, 20 years, but it's the gross price that's gone up because the tuition discount, in 1990, the average discount was 25%, meaning the average price that a college got was 75% of their published price. And most of the aid back in 90 was either athletic scholarships or need-based aid. Today, the average discount rate is 50%. So if you look at that published price of $40,000, the average net that the school is getting is $20,000, and a very significant part of that is merit aid that's being given out. So the dynamics are changing, and it's difficult for people to understand or to know in advance at a private institution what they will pay. And at a public institution, it's difficult to predict at many of them what they'll pay from one year to the next because of significant changes in state funding, although in some states, the states have been requiring the universities to moderate their tuition and even to guarantee it for 4 years. I believe they're doing this in Illinois now, and then I think some other states.
I want to pull a couple of things apart. You're talking about discounts in tuition and not a huge increase in net tuition, but that's after financial aid. But when you're talking about discounts, do you mean the private schools actually reducing the tuition off the so-called rate card?
Well, I call it that, yes. I mean, it's given out in the form of scholarships and grants, but that's what it amounts to.
Okay, I see how the discount works now. Okay. Dr. Richard Fossey at the University of Louisiana Lafayette. So with tuition rising well beyond inflation now, how much has student debt load increased over, say, the last 20 years?
Excuse me. Jeffrey, it has increased exponentially. The total outstanding indebtedness now is $1.4 trillion, and that doesn't include private student loans, which is at least another $100 billion. So we're talking $1.5 trillion in student loan debt. Every year, the average amount that a graduate accumulates goes up. It's about $33,000, $34,000 now. And it's just a disaster. And the people who seem to be hurting the most are not the people who borrow the most. It's people who borrow small amounts of money to attend for-profit colleges and community colleges and then just don't pay it back. It's unsustainable.
They borrow small amounts, you're saying, to go to for-profit colleges?
Yeah. A lot of the I think the people who've been victimized the most are people who've attended for-profit colleges. All the data on those institutions is bad. And a lot of people, they're unsophisticated. A lot of them are minority students. They're lured into for-profit colleges, some of which spend more on recruiting than they do on instruction. That's been established. So they borrow a relatively small amount of money. They drop out or they finish their program, but they don't get any benefit from it. And those people are defaulting. And the consequences of default are catastrophic.
All right, we'll get into what happens when people do default on student loans with Dr. Richard Fossey at the University of Louisiana Lafayette. We also have Dr. Lucy Lepofsky at Lepofsky Consulting and Max Lubin, the CEO of RISE, seeking to get tuition made free for public colleges in California. You'll join the conversation with us if you'd like by phone or by email. We'll be back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking about a problem that many Americans are familiar with right now, the high cost of higher education and the high cost of the loans that people have to take out to get higher education in America right now. As we've already heard, that tuition has increased far beyond the Consumer Price Index over the last 20 years. Our guests are Lucy Lepofsky from Lepofsky Consulting. She's a former president of Mercy College in Greater New York and very much involved in higher education and executive searches now. Dr. Richard Fossey is a professor at the University of Louisiana Lafayette and an expert on the student debt crisis. He's got a website called condemnedtodebt.org. And then if you go to carise.org, you'll find Maxwell Lubin, who's the CEO of that group, which is seeking to make public college tuition free in California. He's currently a grad student at UC Berkeley. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Richard Fossey, I want to come back to you because we're talking about defaulting on student loans. First of all, how many people have outstanding student loans and what's the average debt load for them?
44 million people have outstanding student loans. And the average debt is not that high. It's about, well, for graduates, people who graduate from four-year college, average debt is about $33,000. But of those 44 million who have outstanding student loans, a ton of them are not paying them back. The New York Times reported a few months ago that just in the year 2016 alone, 1.3 million people defaulted on their student loans. That's at a rate of 3,000 people a day. And in addition to that, there are the people who are not paying their loans but have gotten economic hardship deferment. So they're not counted as defaulters, even though they're not paying on their loans. But the interest is accruing on those loans. So when they get those economic hardship deferments, they're actually digging themselves deeper and deeper into debt because the balance is increasing.
So the interest continues to be compounded.
And then there's about 6.5 million people who are on income-driven repayment plans, and those were expanded during the Obama administration, the pay plan and the rebate plan. Those give people some relief from large monthly payments. People in those income-driven repayment plans pay based on a percentage of their income. But for most of them, their payments aren't large enough to cover accruing interest, so their loans are negatively amortizing. So
even though they're making payments, they'll grow in size over time?
They'll grow in size over time. So they're not counted as defaulters, but most of them will never pay their loans back, even if they make their payments faithfully through the term of the plan. So it's a disaster. The Wall Street Journal published an article a while back that said 40% of people in repayment are not paying down their debt. They've either defaulted, they're in an economic hardship deferment, or they're in income-driven plans making payments that are so low they're not paying down the interest. So the crisis is a lot more serious than the Department of Education would have you believe. The Department of Education publishes a 3-year default rate every fall, and the last one said 11.5% of borrowers in the most recent cohort that they measured were defaulted within 3 years. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. The 5-year default rate is double that. And when you add in all the people who are making payments but not paying down their debt, you know, you're talking 40-50% of the people who have outstanding loans who are not paying them back and will never pay them back.
So let me turn to Max Lubin, who is a graduate student still, in addition to being the CEO of Rise. Max, do you have student loans yourself at this point?
I'm very fortunate in that I do not at this moment. But every day on campus, I work with students who are not only tens of thousands of dollars in debt, but who can't afford even to have their basic needs met, like to get good food and keep reliable shelter over their head. So part of this question is not just about student loan debt, but here in California, it's really about a crisis of students' basic needs being met.
In fact, let's set the what's been going on here, because the California State University system, which includes Humboldt State, is talking about an increase in tuition. The University of California system, UC system, was seeking a pretty good size hike and decided to defer action on that until May to see if the legislature put some more money in. I know the University of Oregon, as of this week, was talking about seeking a 3% hike in tuition. What is the idea behind RISE? You want to make tuition free at public universities in California?
That's exactly right. And when we take a step back, higher education is the path to the American dream. And when we talk about higher education, it's not just a 4-year philosophy degree at Berkeley. It's a welding certificate at your local community college. It's a degree in coding. And when we raise tuition and make college more expensive, we're turning away students from that American dream. In the last decade, the Cal State University system and University of California system have turned away more than 1 million California applicants. Think about how much potential that represents for our state's economy, for our education system, that's being lost because state lawmakers, as we've talked about, have cut funding for both the Cal State Universities and the University of California dramatically in the last few decades.
Well, that I want to talk about the economics here then. Lucy Lipovsky, you might know this as well as anybody, but, I mean, we're talking about a system where they've got so many students at the California State University system. They turned away 31,000 potential freshmen, I believe, before the 16-17 academic year. I mean, if you've got that many people who want to come in, I mean, there are limits to space, obviously, but what can you do in terms of finding an equilibrium pricing when you're running an institution of higher education?
Well, that's kind of a very interesting question, because you would think as price rises, fewer students would choose to come.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all still wanting to come, and they're expecting to get financial aid in different ways to pay for it. I mean, California, you have a generous state grant program that helps many of them at the Cal State schools. One of the things you talk about California residents that are turned away, many of the public institutions are K-12 taking more residents from other states because they pay a much higher tuition. And one of the problems that the public institutions have is, you know, there's three basic sources of revenue, the state, the student, and then any fundraising or endowment income they have. And so if the state pulls back and isn't supporting as well, if they don't increase the student piece of it or manage to get a lot more in fundraising, which doesn't turn around quickly, they have to cut the quality of what they're offering or cut back on some of the services that they're providing students. And as we've seen enrollment expand to more students who are not as well prepared as they ought to be, our schools are finding they need to provide more services, both academic support, psychological support services, and those are very costly. So they're in a catch-22. Students don't want to pay, and the state doesn't want to pay. So calling for free tuition, unless the state is going to pick up that share of the tuition that the students were paying and not cut back on their own responsibility. I mean, what we've seen is states not living up to what used to be their responsibility for supporting higher ed. And the question is sort of, what is the public good of college and how much ought government to pay? And what should private people pay? I mean, we do get a monetary return from going to college. All the data shows that a college degree has a very positive impact on income. Unemployment among college graduates never got to 5%, even in the 2008 recession. So there's a lot of private benefit. So there, it is not illegitimate to have some sort of cost sharing or payment sharing between government and private and people. But we should have a very good system of not excluding people by economic class, so that our aid should all be need-based and students who can't afford it should be provided funds. And I guess to your point, Richard, I don't think some loans are bad. The average level of indebtedness is about $28,000-$30,000. That's price of cars and things of that sort. That for undergraduate. You know, when you go to graduate school, it's a whole different case. But that's not, from my perspective, an unmanageable level of debt if you come out with your college degree, and something people, you know, should not mind paying. The real problem is for those who drop out, where their economic gain to themselves is usually negative. It can be worse than what a high school graduate would end up with. So it's a complex set of situations, but you need to make sure the colleges have the resources to offer quality programs, and the schools are provided with sources of funds to be able to pay it. But there should be some willingness on the part of students to contribute something, because ultimately they will get economic gain if they're successful in college.
Okay, a couple of different angles to come out of that with. Let me remind our listeners, we're talking about tuition and student loans and how much money is getting spent on college and how much money people are ending up owing when they come out. Lucy Lepofsky is with Lepofsky Consulting. She's the former president of Mercy College in Greater New York. Richard Fossey is at the University of Louisiana Lafayette. He's a professor of education there, and he's got a website called condemnedtodebt.org. And Max Lubin is the CEO of RISE, which seeks to make public university tuition free in California. He is a graduate student right now at UC Berkeley. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And before we get any more time gone by, Max Lubin, I want to talk about the mechanism, because Dr. Lepofsky was just talking about the fact that somebody else has to pay if the students don't. So how do you envision being able to make tuition free for public students in California?
It's a great question. And the reason we're focused on student organizing and student advocacy is because we need to hold state lawmakers accountable for divesting from students and cutting funding. That's why we're seeing the cost of college rise, not just in California, but in states across the country. So when we talk about the budget math, this year, Governor Brown is saving away billions of dollars for a rainy day fund. Well, we live in a state where we have tens of thousands of students who can't afford a rainy day fund because they're struggling right now. And by divesting that money from higher education and saving it for a rainy day, instead of making a long-term investment in students, we're ultimately shortchanging the state in terms of both economic returns and also tax revenue that we're foregoing because not enough students are having the opportunity to pursue a higher education.
So you're saying this is the rainy day?
That's exactly right. And there's more than enough money in the budget right now to not only buy out the proposed tuition hikes for the University of California and Cal State University, but to fully fund them to make college tuition free and really expand aid, which is an important part of this dimension, to help students avert debt or overwhelming student loan debt so that more students can succeed in college. So we were talking a little bit earlier about the importance of college completion and really staying the course. Well, one of the main reasons students drop out is because of college affordability, because they get to a certain point in their career where they simply can't afford college anymore, even when they ostensibly should be protected from tuition hikes, they may not be. And so we're seeing a situation where if we want more students to complete college, we need to make it more affordable.
I want to come to that point, Richard Fossey, though, about people who realize that they're just in over their heads already and can't afford any more college or to take out any more loans, and they stop partway through. From what Lucy Lipovsky was saying, these are people in some of the worst shape because they didn't get a chance to complete the education that would have helped them pay back the loan.
They're in terrible shape. First of all, their credit is ruined. Second, if they've defaulted on a loan, they can't take out more loans for education. And third, it's very, very difficult to discharge student loans in bankruptcy, and even people who are deserving of relief. So once they fall into that pit of student loan default, they not only owe what they borrowed, they owe the accrued interest. And then when the debt collectors show up, they add 25% to the outstanding balance, and then that gets added to their debt. And so they just simply can't pay it off. What the Obama administration did, and I appreciate what the administration was trying to do, was to shift those people into long-term income-based repayment plans where they made payments based on their income. And that gets them out of default, and they make payments that they can live with, basically.
Oh, these are the IBRPs. Okay, I saw them all over your website, and now we know.
So, my solution for this, and I've been saying this for 20 years, is we've got to amend the bankruptcy code and allow deserving, honest, but unfortunate, deserving student loan defaulters to go to bankruptcy court and discharge those loans in bankruptcy.
Yeah, are the student loans like the hardest loan to discharge as a debt through bankruptcy?
They fall in a class of loans that are very difficult to discharge. Tax debt, alimony, judgments for negligence. As a lot of people pointed out, basically student loan debtors are treated like criminals. It is as difficult for them to discharge their loan in bankruptcy as it would be for someone to discharge a fine for a criminal act. It's just very unfair, and it shows a lack of understanding about the people who are in trouble. I think there's a sense in Congress and the public policy communities that the people who default on their loans are deadbeats, but they're not deadbeats. They're people who borrowed money and didn't get much or any benefit from it and simply can't pay it back.
Let's take a call here. We have Jim in Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Richard Fossey, Lucy Lipovsky, and Max Lubin.
Hi. I've got a suggestion on how to deal with the student debt. It's a twofold thing. It comes from Bernie Sanders. Put a 1% financial transaction tax on all stock and bond sales. That would raise billions of dollars. With half of the money, you'd go to the states and you'd say, we're going to give you this money, but we want you to lower the cost of your in-state tuition. With the other half of that money, I would go to any graduate, and you have to graduate from college or vocational or technical school, but if you graduate, this would apply to you. If you don't graduate, it would not. But if you graduate, the government would take your loan, and for 10 years, you would have 0% interest. it would give you the ability and the incentive to pay it off. If after 10 years you haven't paid it off, you would have to refinance it at whatever rate, and then it's back on you. But it would give people an ability to get rid of that debt, get it off of their shoulders, so they can get married, have a kid, you know, buy a house, buy a car, take a vacation. But right now, it's 6 or 8% interest. You're all you're doing is, like this guy said, you're servicing the loan. You're falling behind.
All right, so 1% tax on all stock and bond sales.
Yes, and it would raise billions of dollars, and the people that are buying and selling stocks, it's de minimis. They wouldn't even know it was there. But it would help students. And as far as, you know, tuition-free, I'd say no. I think it's good for students to have skin in the game, but it's not good when they have to put their whole body in there.
All right.
And so, yes, thanks.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate that. We'll get responses on the other side of a break. We're going to take one now. This is the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. We're talking to Lucy Lipovsky at Lipovsky Consulting, Richard Fossey at the University of Louisiana Lafayette, and condemnedtodebt.org, and Max Lubin, the CEO of RISE, which is about making tuition free at California public institutions. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with our guests in response to that comment, and we'll take more comments from you by phone or email when we return to the Exchange in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about the high cost of college, both in the tuition payments, if you can afford them, because they are very high, and if you can't afford them, college loan debt and how high that can get for people. Average debt right now for 44 million people in the country, $33,000 in student loans. And a lot of people default on those loans. 1.3 million people believe the numbers are that Richard Fossey was giving us. He is at the University of Louisiana Lafayette and at condemnedtodebt.org. Lucy Lipovsky is an economist who focuses on higher education and runs Lipovsky Consulting. She was the former president, or is the former president, of Mercy College in the New York area. And Max Lubin is the CEO of RISE, which is about making student tuition free at public institutions in California. He is himself a grad student at UC Berkeley. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So let me parse out some answers to Jim and Ashlyn's idea. For one, starting with you, Max Lubin, the idea that he doesn't want tuition free because he thinks that students should have some skin in the game, not their whole body, as he puts it, as they do now. But how does that strike you?
Well, I think it arrives at an important point and an important criticism of this work. So taking a big picture for a second, we're celebrating UC Berkeley's 150th birthday this year. For most of that time, for more than 100 years, tuition at Berkeley was free. So what we're proposing and what we're advocating for isn't a radical new idea. It's just about going back to the system that benefited our parents and grandparents. About the question of students having skin in the game, maintaining academic eligibility at a time when so many students' basic needs go unmet is enough of a challenge. And frankly, you know, in 1978, you could work a summer part-time minimum wage job and pay for a four-year degree. Right now, in our new economic reality, that just isn't the case. Students are juggling multiple jobs to keep a roof over their head while they're in school. And so given that, free tuition is only a part of the overall cost of college. Students are putting skin in the game by working, by maintaining their academic eligibility. And as we've talked about, you know, the journey to graduation is challenging enough. We need to make it easier for students to succeed, because right now California is falling short of the college graduates we need to meet economic demand.
So you're talking about free tuition, but there would still be fees, there would still be cost of books, dormitories, food, all that stuff would still be additional?
Well, part of our policy platform is expanding aid to cover some of those costs, particularly for students who come from low-income backgrounds for whom college is really the only pathway that they have to the middle class. So we definitely need to expand aid to cover some of those costs. But from the sort of tuition fee side, community college students in California don't pay tuition, they pay fees. So when we talk about free tuition, it's really about not just covering the cost of tuition and fees, but addressing some of those additional costs as well, so that we're investing more in students in a way that's equitable and helps more students succeed.
For the other part of the comments we got from Jim and Ashlyn, I want to turn to Lucy Lipovsky, because you're the economist. A 1% tax on stock and bond sales, a transaction tax, seems like it would bring in a tremendous amount of money.
I imagine it would bring in a tremendous amount of money, and I'm not an expert on what the impact of putting that kind of tax would be on the selling of tax of the, you know, the financial transactions. I think people are right. You need a source of revenue to support what you're talking about. And clearly the source of revenue that's being proposed is probably quite a progressive one, because it's the wealthier people that buy these financial instruments. But I don't feel qualified to make a statement about whether it raises the right amount of money or what the implications are in terms of the economy as a whole.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you about drivers of higher tuition. We're aware of what it is in the public system, and often Oregon's a great example. Oregon voters decided to drop property tax rates significantly in the 1990 election. And so what that did was force the state to pay additional money to the local school districts that they lost through property taxes, which left less money for everything else. So where the state of Oregon, for example, once gave about 70% of any of the budgets for the state universities, it's down around the low teens now, around 12%, I think, last year for Southern Oregon University, where we are based. What are the drivers, though, of increasing tuition in the private system with which you are familiar, Lucy Lipovsky?
Well, a lot of it is significantly increasing financial aid, which is what I call the discount, where a lot of people are not only unable to pay the price, but there's now a large group that's unwilling to pay. People want things on sale. We're used to that when we go to the store. And so the same kind of mentality applies to college these days. And so they want to get a deal. And so even if they can afford the price, they often don't pay it. There are only about 30 or 40 private colleges left in the country that only give aid based on financial need. The rest are giving aid based on both need and, quote, merit. And merit can be very broadly defined. And many colleges give some kinds of scholarships or grants to 100% of the students that apply. And it's the way they are able to fill up their seats.
What about faculty and or administrative salaries? Where have those trended, particularly on the private side?
Well, you know, they've all trended up. Everyone wants raises. I would say on the faculty side, what's also happened is a desire to work less. It's considered prestigious the fewer the courses you teach, and that brings the price up. But to counter that, many colleges are using many more part-time faculty. There's certainly, the data shows, has been a growth in staff and administrators. Some of that has to do with more regulations that require response. Some of that has to do with more services that we're providing, you know, all the extra services that students need. So many of our students in college today have some sorts of learning challenges or psychological challenges, and the colleges are becoming the repository to have to help deal with them. And then some may just be bloat and inefficiency. They're clearly schools that are working in a lean way, who don't have a lot of administrators and a lot of top heaviness, can operate much more efficiently and at a much lower cost than others. There are a lot of ways to streamline the way you do your processes, and there's a lot of consortial activity and outsourcing that can also save a lot of money.
For basic things like payroll?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no reason every school runs their own payroll. And I don't know how it works at the UC system, but certainly in Maryland, where I know more about how the university worked, they concentrated a lot of their services. They used one finance system for all their colleges. But it took many years. For many years, each one operated very independently. And we also probably have too many colleges. You know, in the for-profit sector, if you're small and if, you know, you're having enrollment or selling problems, you look for a buyer or you consolidate. With alums and with people who are loving their school, it's very hard for a college to go out of business. And so we proliferate, I think, a lot of inefficiencies. It's hard for colleges to merge. I think we will see more of that. You know, we run with a lot of our schools have empty seats in their classes. We have curriculum which are inefficient. The more choices you give students, and the less likely you are to fill up each class, and the less efficiently you'll operate. So if you have fewer choices, I'm not saying constrain the choices so students don't have some, but you can offer choices through offering them access to online programs, access to other colleges. Not every college has to teach everything, and certainly in areas of the country or area in a city, schools can allow students to take courses at other colleges so that they each specialize in areas and aren't all things to all people.
Richard Fossey, I want to bring you in on this point because you had talked about on your blog as well about you think some smaller private colleges may be in trouble in the long run.
I do, Jeffrey. I think a lot of them are going to close. These little schools with 1,000 students or less just can't make it, and they're going to close. It's a Harvard professor whose name escapes me predicts that half of them will close in the next 10 years.
Oh, Clay Christensen.
Yes, Clay Christensen. That's right. I don't know if his estimate is right, but it's definitely the small liberal arts colleges are under a lot of stress. I have friends working in them all over the United States, and very difficult to attract students, and it's very difficult to offer the amenities that the larger schools offer. So I think they're going to be closing. And to get to Max's point, if California went to free tuition, that would put further pressure on the private liberal arts colleges. New York has
I was going to say New York is under stress now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And we could see that coming when New York began offering free tuition at the public institutions. That's puts a major strain on those small liberal arts colleges in New York, and there are a bunch of them. I'm trying to think. College of New Rochelle.
Uh-huh. Iona, perhaps, things like that?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I still agree with Max. I think to go to free colleges, that's the way to go. But there will be a cost, and I think the cost will be to the small liberal arts colleges.
All right, we have a question here, for, you know, and it gives us a chance to get to a personal story. Leslie wrote in, no town given. She says, any advice for a mother of a smart senior with only B average grades? It is a very hard, stressful time. Why don't each of you weigh in on that? We'll start with you, Max Lubin. I'm a B student with, what did we do?
Well, if Leslie is here in California, I'm very excited to share that thanks to the advocacy that we did with thousands of students across the state, any California student can enroll in their first year of community college for free this year. So I would certainly explore that option. The second is to make sure that your student is maxing out on the financial aid that they're eligible for. So that includes not only filing the FAFSA paperwork, which will be due in the next few weeks, but also all of the state aid and private aid that's available in California or Oregon if they are there. The third thing is just to remember that although we have a culture that prioritizes college selectivity and sort of pursuing elite colleges, that may not be the right path for every student. But we live in a new economic reality where there are no good jobs with just a high school diploma. And so I would say whatever path your student chooses, whether that's to enroll at a community college, to pursue an associate's or a certificate or a bachelor's, that staying the course and being persistent and continuing to work hard to pursue higher education is absolutely essential.
I think we all agree that higher education is essential. Richard Fossey, would you give any additional advice to the mother with the senior with the B average?
I have a couple of pieces of advice. One, do not enroll in a for-profit college. Go to a community college or a public institution, as Max suggested. Two, do not concoct a higher education plan that requires a parent to co-sign your student loan. That is a disaster. And don't do that. And I would say three, adjust your dreams to reality. I heard Michelle Singletary, who writes for the Washington Post, talk about this very issue. And she said, if your child comes to you and says, I want to go to Emory, I want to go to Dartmouth, whatever, if that's not financially feasible, you've got to adjust your goals. And so those would be my three pieces of advice. Don't go to a for-profit institution. Don't do anything that requires a parent to co-sign the loan. And don't go to an elite school unless you have a pretty good picture of how you're going to be able to pay off the debt that you're going to acquire.
Right, if you'll make a lot of money with the degree you get. Lucy Lipovsky, anything to add to that list?
Well, yeah, actually, I'll take exception to some of what Richard Fassi says. I'm not quite as down on for-profits. There are some very good ones, and you should look at them, and you can see what their graduation rates are and all. But I wouldn't paint them all with a black picture. Number two, be careful if you go to a community college. Make sure you know where you want to transfer so you take the right courses. There's an abysmal transfer rate from community colleges to four-year colleges, and that's one of the serious issues we need to work on. Because the most economical approach is go 2 years to a two-year, then move to a four-year school. But too often students get derailed and don't transfer or end up having to take lots of extra credit so it doesn't become so economical.
All right.
If you want to go to a four-year private college especially, men are in demand, especially at small liberal arts colleges. They're 60-65% female, so men will often get a better deal. If you go to a college where your son, if you look at schools where his above the average school.
All right, Dr. Lipovsky, I'm sorry we have to cut it off there. Dr. Lucy Lipovsky, thank you so much from Lipovsky Consulting. Richard Fosky at the University of Louisiana Lafayette. Max Lubin at RISE and the University of California, Berkeley. Thank you all for joining us today.